Hello and welcome to Appy Monday with me, Martin Beebe, and the microphone. Sorry we're running a little bit late today, but it's better late than never. Today we were going to be talking about dealing with data in apps, but I've decided to mix things up a little and talk about some of the new things that we've seen from last week's Build conference. If you don't know what Microsoft Build is, it's a yearly conference and it's Microsoft's equivalent to, say, Google I.O. or Apple's WWDC, Worldwide Developer Conference. There were a number of talks that I thought were really great, but the following five were the ones that really captured my imagination. The first was one from Miguel de la Casa in session, I think, 3653, Go Mobile with C# and Xamarin. And it talked about how C# can reach over 2.5 billion devices. We have a show about the Xamarin project, which enables that C# to go that far, coming up in a few weeks. And I thought it was awesome to see really like the breadth of what you can do and what you can build using C#.
But when it comes to applications and when it comes to engagement and when it comes to competing, you really should go away with native application. And people want applications like this one. You want applications that are very smooth, that respond quickly, that take advantage of the sensors in the operating system, that take advantage of the latest innovations from the platform in terms of animations, dynamics, physics, simulation. These devices have hundreds of sensors. They have a dozen of sensors, and they have hundreds of APIs to take advantage of these things, from global positioning to the direction that you're looking into. So you want to create great user experiences without any limitations. This is a sample of some great experiences that we've seen, is that every single one of these native apps has been built with C#. These are not native applications built in Objective-C or Java. They're all C# applications.
It's pretty astonishing, really. I also particularly enjoyed his argument for going native and why he defined, and the sort of way that he kind of defines cross-platform development.
I'm going to try to demystify what it takes to build a native application on Android and iOS. So let's start with the most common approach of how people build applications today. We call this the silo approach. Essentially, and this is how historically it has happened, you have a team that has to learn Objective-C. You go and build your application. It's a very nice application. And then the market, Android becomes very popular, and all of a sudden you have to spin up a separate team. Now you got a bunch of iOS junkies, and they don't want to touch Java, so you got to spin up a new team, and they're going to do a lot of Java code, and they're going to build your application. And then Windows Phone comes in, and you need to build the same thing, right? So now you have three teams, each one working with a different programming language. And while this works, and certainly companies with the there's companies that have the budget that you need to make this happen. You still need to maintain three teams, three set of tools. You get problems with feature parity. You implement the feature, it's not on the other one. You upgrade the server, you didn't release it in all the platforms. You start running into, if you have seven releases per year, now you have seven releases across three different platforms, all with different levels of features and completion. The second approach is what most people call cross-platform. So this is a term that annoys me a little bit, because when people say cross-platform, they're thinking some sort of write once, run anywhere technology. So this is typically an approach where you use some kind of abstraction layer or some API. You use a single language, single set of API, and then a magic box. We call it the magic box. The magic box poops out an Android app, poops out an iOS app, poops out a Windows app. And it is the lowest common denominator, right? So these things, pretty much by definition, are poor experiences. You don't really get a very good experience on these platforms. You just get something, and you know them, right? You've seen these apps before. You've tried those apps before. You immediately can tell when this app was built with a cross-platform application. The labels are the wrong place. The navigation is completely, that has nothing to do with the operating system. When the operating system upgrades, nothing looks the way that it's supposed to look. So this is what, absolutely, we don't like that. We don't recommend. You can still do it. And there are scenarios where you can do it. For example, if you have a captive audience, right, and they're forced to use your app, then you can ship anything to those people. Really, when there's no competition, it's a beautiful world. So So you can do whatever you want. Our approach, on the other hand, is an approach where you actually have to compete. And you're going to compete on quality, and you're going to compete on user experiences. The way that we approach this thing is you will have to architect your application in a way where all of your shared, all of the code that you could share across platform, like accessing a web service, storage, data synchronization, your business logic, you put all of that in a shared library. And we'll talk a little bit about the approaches that you can take here. And then you use C# to build an iOS app. You use C# with our iOS API, C# with Android APIs, or C# with Windows APIs to create native experiences everywhere.
I think Miguel also delivered the funniest demo of the whole event. He really immortalized the moment.
Take a picture. Damn it. OK, Glass. Take a picture. All right, good smile, guys. So the problem with this is that, you know, you're in polite conversation, and they hear you say, OK, Glass, take a picture. And what do they think? It's like, wow, this asshole. So I figured, this is not me. This is not me. OK, Glass, take a picture. What is this nonsense? Could we switch just for a second to my back to my computer? So I want to show you what I did. I built this application. Well, it's called Nailed It. It's probably not the most, tasty name. But what I did is I built this application. It's actually three activities in one. It's called the Nailed It activity, the Capture the Moment activity, and the Immortalize the Moment activity. So that allows me to be more myself. I can be, you know, with people in a cocktail party, and I can just go, OK, Glass, immortalize the moment.
So you can watch the whole talk on MSDN Channel 9. The code is 3653. Just put that in the Channel 9 search box at the top, and that'll be the first result. Or look for the link in the description below. So talk number two by F. Avery Bishop, Rob Chambers, Monica South. And it covered the developer experience of the new Cortana Personal Assistant in Windows Phone 8. Are you not so glad that they kept the Cortana name? I think it's an amazing sort of stroke of marketing genius rather than sort of Microsoft Personal Digital Assistant 3.4, Service Pack 2. There were a number of demos that I thought were quite good in that the whole kind of talk, but the Hula one was the most interesting. It showed that you can have your Android sort of app handle speech requests and kind of build into the Cortana, I can't even say it. It's still a good name, though. The Cortana experience.
But a real-world thing happened to me the other day. I was sitting in my house. I was working on build slides, of all things, imagine. And my kids were watching a TV show that I really enjoy watching with them. But I wasn't going to get to watch it with them. So I was like, oh, man. And I was like, aha, I'll use Hulu to add that to my queue. So in the same kind of way I'll show you this, I added that particular show. Go back to Cortana. Real quick, I'm on the go. I want to add a show so I can watch it later. Hulu, add Deadbeat to my queue.
Opening Hulu Plus.
Hulu opens up. We'll get to hear from Paul a little bit later how he did this. Deadbeat's in my queue. There it is, ready to go for me later when I want to use it. Now again, back to this keeping the user in control. They can make their own choices if they're using speech or text, using built-in capabilities, or the applications that they love, or using natural language or keywords. Let's take a look at this. So I also have some favorites in Hulu. So I can just use keywords, and I can say Hulu favorites, right? I don't have to go on my start screen, find where the Hulu app is. It loads up, then navigate over to the right place. I can just simply and easily say Hulu favorites. I didn't say it to it. It doesn't talk back to me. There's all my favorites. So Cortana, like I've said a couple times, Cortana does let you as the user interact on your terms. Speech recognition, text input, natural language, keywords, built-in features, or the applications that you've downloaded onto your phone, the applications that you hear in this audience and online are building. You can integrate with Cortana in three easy steps. This is a bit of an extension to what we've done in the past, but yet it's also oh so revolutionary and easy. First step is you're going to create a voice command definition. It's sort of a specification of what your app would like to have given to it. And it could be as simple as, this is my app name and I want all the words that come afterwards. Or it could be more complicated than that. Your app, when you first run it, you would register that voice command definition file with the system. So then in future runs, when people are using Cortana, either with text or with speech, if they announce to your application that you should do something, it will.
You can watch the whole session that goes into tons more detail and shows off more features by going to the MSDN Channel 9 and then searching for 2-530 in the site search bar. Or I've included it in the video description below. So the next session, talk number 3, it got me thinking a lot about Windows and the kind of convergence that's happening. It's now possible, apparently, although I've not done it yet, to build an application which runs across Windows, Windows Phone, and even the Xbox. So the talk was called Building a Converged Phone and PC App Using HTML and JavaScript. Its talk code was 2-540, and it was by Ryan J. Salva and Josh Williams. I'm more probably involved in JavaScript apps when it comes to Windows than, say, C# now. But the concept of universal apps is really kind of the same across both of those languages. What's interesting about universal apps is now you can build, you know, the same project, sort of firewall build, a Windows Phone 8 and a Windows 8.1 application at the same time. Now, if you're new to Windows, you might be like, what? Could I not have already do that before? But no, it's kind of new. There were very different platforms before. So it's really interesting and cool to see that convergence, being able to write, kind of basically write once and then just have to customize the UIs, which is really cool. So in this talk, they start by showing a really simple sort of file new project.
There's this new kind called a universal project type. So we're going to pick a universal project type. And in this particular case, we're going to choose the navigation template. It's kind of my default starting place for most projects because it's got just enough code in there to kind of get you jump started with navigation, but you don't have to do a bunch of deleting.
Yeah, so first thing we're going to see when we get into this new universal project is it actually has 3 components. One of the things that we see is what's called the Windows project. Let's see if I can make my Solution Explorer a little bit wider here. So this is the Windows project, and this has Windows-specific code. Today, it doesn't really have much. It has a default.html to load up the project. It has a package manifest, and out of the box, to kind of drive you down the path that we think is probably one of the right paths, we went and we put the CSS for a page into that guy.
And do you want to talk a little bit about why we've got default.html and manifest in there?
Sure. So default.html today is the way that you boot up an app. So the pattern that you use when building apps targeting Windows with HTML is generally this thing we call a single page app. And the single page app is named such for the fact that it loads a single page. It doesn't really ever navigate the browser per se.
Yep.
And then it loads up things that we call fragments. There's lots of different names for them depending on the framework you're using. But loads up fragments and then inserts them into the DOM dynamically. When we released WinJS 2.1 for the phone, we did not release a converged package of WinJS. That's on our roadmap. It's something we're heading towards. But today, there's a specific thing that is the WinJS package. And so you have to have 2 default.htmls, one in each thing, so you can refer to the right WinJS package. That's generally speaking the reason we have it today.
Basic idea, just minor differences between the 2 WinJSs between phone and Windows Store. They are just that, minor differences.
I don't like minor differences. I'm hoping really these things are minor, but I guess we won't know until we actually really sort of start seeing the SDKs and looking into more detail.
So you'll find that when we actually end up writing code, most of our code goes into that shared directory, right? So the third one down, you've got the 2 project heads, one for Windows Store, one for Windows Phone. The last one is shared, and virtually everything that we do today is going to be in that shared project because it is shared code. The difference between the Windows Phone one and the Windows Store one is trivial enough that we can kind of coalesce and bring all of our shared code into one project.
Yeah, so I'm just going to close up those other 2 projects. The only time we're going to talk about those is a little later. We're going to do some specialization for one of them. And periodically, you'll see me switch between the 2 of them. So one thing a lot of people have to find when and you get presented with it in this situation, the universal app, is how do I switch which emulator I'm running under or whether or not I'm running under the Windows version or the phone version. So right now, the Windows version is highlighted. When I press F5, we go to the very, very sexy navigation template. It says content goes here. And if I go back and go out of the debugger, I can right-click on the Windows Phone app and say set as startup project. And then when I hit F5, what F5 says is, hey, go load the emulator, go boot it up.
So the whole session is pretty decent. They build a whole application. They build a Windows 8 application, and then they go on to build a Windows Phone 8 application. If you want to see the whole session, head over to MSDN Channel 9 and search for code 2-5-4-0, or just look in the description below for the link. Following on from Universal Apps, it was interesting to see what's new in WinJS. And so the talk 2-506 by Paul Gusmarino and Nitin Sharma was really quite interesting, where they looked into the sort of WinJS library. WinJS, if you don't know, is the UI framework for building Windows 8 applications. But in this talk, they discussed bringing WinJS to the phone platform to obviously enable universal applications. And also enabling, and perhaps this is more interesting, enabling it to perhaps go to other platforms like the web and potentially Android and iOS by open sourcing the WinJS sort of library. It's nice to see how much they've done in terms of interoperability with different libraries.
Now I want to talk about interoperability with other popular libraries. We've talked about this, and I've kind of said to you the claim that, hey, WinJS is really designed from the ground up to be interoperable with other libraries. The ListView is designed to just accept any function that takes data and outputs DOM elements as its templating function. So if you want to use Mustache templates or some other templating system, that works. We've really designed it in a very componentized way from the start so that you can interoperate it with other libraries. In fact, on GitHub today, you can go and you can find there's an Angular adapter for WinJS, and there's also a knockout adapter for WinJS. Here's a piece of Angular kind of code. You can see there's a directive there, the WinRating directive. That directive is actually, though, instantiating a WinJS rating control, because the Angular WinJS adapter made it kind of easy, just kind of plugged into the Angular system directives for the different WinJS controls, and then you can use attributes to set data binding on them. So here the user rating property, for example, is being bound to the rating Angular variable, along with the ng model on the input type. So this just looks like Angular code, but it's using WinJS controls. Here's another example, which is using knockout. So this looks like knockout. Very different binding system, very different model. We're very open to, and we think these are going to continue to evolve in the industry. So we're very open to all the different models you might want to use for app development. You can still take advantage of the features of WinJS and use WinJS controls. Here in knockout, the way that the rating control is instantiated is through a binding. So in that last div there, which says data bind, win rating, and then it recursively passes the user rating as a sub kind of property to itself as part of the, and that's just how knockout binding system works. And so let me just show you that with a real code demo here. So I've got another VS solution. All right, so in this VS solution here, I have two projects. One is using that knockout adapter I talked about. One is using the Angular adapter I talked about. Let's look at the Angular one first. Here you'll see that same code that I showed you on the PowerPoint slide. Here's the directive, the WinRating directive. Here's the attribute that we're going to be binding against, the user rating. Here's the controller. So they added this WinJS module. Then the Angular system kind of hooked up the binding and stuff. And so let's run that to show that kind of working. So here you see the WinJS rating control. It has a very nice experience. I hover over it, does the right stars. I can tab to it, and it'll keyboard around it, works with touch and so forth, all the things you expect of that control. But it's bound to this text box here. So if I change this value 5 to be 3 or 2 or 1 or 4 or 5 or whatever, it uses the two-way data binding system that Angular has to bind that up. So you can use that WinJS control, for example, along with Angular and its data binding.
It's a really interesting talk, but I think the most exciting feature of that whole thing is the idea that the Windows team open source something on GitHub using an Apache license. Now, there are lots of teams at Microsoft that do open source and kind of accept contributions as well, not just open source in that you can see the code, but actually accept contributions such as the ASP.NET and Azure team. But this is the first time, at least I can remember, having seen the Windows team do it. And I think that development is pretty exciting in itself, and perhaps even maybe more exciting than the WinJS library being portable to other platforms. So anyway, if you're interested in WinJS, take a look at the talk code 2-506, or for the link, look in the video description below. Lastly, I really like the push notifications talk 2-616 by Ellie DiMaggio. You can send notifications to most types of mobile devices using the Azure Notifications feature. And it's nice to see that the way they've integrated some of those features into Visual Studio as well.
In the meantime, we added Kindle. We now support iOS, Android with Google, Android with Kindle, and Windows Store and Windows Phone. We added tag expressions. Not only you can send to a single tag, but you can actually send to a Boolean expression of tags. We will see how that is very useful. We announced today the new update of VS 2013 includes Notification Hub support for sending notifications in the Server Explorer. We delivered a public preview of the integration with mobile services. If you use mobile services, Notification Hub is really integrated in the experience. It becomes a lot easier to go in the advanced patterns, and is really like a great experience to use. We changed the pricing model. It's right now is just push based. There's no active devices. It's just by how many pushes you send. And we also have a private preview for bulk registration management APIs that is available for customers that are interested.
I thought the getting started demo of this talk was really impressive. So I thought I'd show you that now. I remember writing something very similar to this back in 2010, just to send notifications to mobile devices. And it took me about 2 days. So to watch him do it in 5 minutes, it is pretty impressive.
First thing, you can create a notification hub under App Services, Service Bus, and Notification Hub. Let's create a new one. Let's create this in West US where I already have a namespace. And here is my notification hub. I have already one configured here. This is the dashboard. You can see, let's see, maybe I already have, there's something that I did. Yeah. Okay, here you can see incoming messages, registration operations, messages. There are a lot of telemetry. There are some usage overviews, how many pushes were sent, API calls, active devices, and so on. In the monitoring tab, you have access to a rich set of metrics. So for every PNS, you can know which outcomes were output and when. In the configure tab, this is where you put the credentials for your PNSs. Here you see I have WNS configured. There's Windows Phone, there's Apple, there's Google, and since I think half an hour ago, Amazon device messaging too. You also have a chance to send debug test notifications to see directly from the portal, so you do not have to create like a console app anymore. It's really right there. Now, I have here an app, which is basically just a blank app. The only thing that I did was that I associated this app with my app in the store. This is because that procedure not require multi-factor auth. I didn't want to test my luck too much tonight. So what I'm going to do here, I already downloaded the NuGet package, but otherwise I still have to do everything. I go in the app manifest. I am going to set this app to be able to receive toast notifications. Then inside my app, I'm going to create one instance of a notification hub class. This is basically the client that is going to talk to the notification hub. And then in unlaunched, what I'm going to do, I'm going to instantiate this class. My notification hub is called build 2014, and then I have to put my credentials. I get this from the portal. Connection information. I'm going to select the listen credentials. I do not want my app to be able to potentially spam all the clients in my that install my app. I'm going to create a new Here it is, a new async method. And here, what I'm going to do, like we saw in the graph before, in the chart before, I'm going to create to ask for a channel from WNS. And that was a mouthful. OK. Here I get my channel. Once I have my channel, I basically have to store it in my notification hub. How do I do it? I basically use my hub that I already configured, and I register for native notifications. And here, I'm going to set my URI. Now we can set a breakout point and launch this app. So if everything goes well, we should arrive here at my breakpoint. We have the channel. This thing is the big channel URI, the transient address of this app on my machine right now. And now I'm going to store this in my hub. OK. Now let's look at the VS integration. Here in the Server Explorer, if you install the new VS update, you're going to see your notification hubs. And in particular, we're going to see this one that we're using, the 2014. Right-click, we can send a test notification. We're going to broadcast to everybody, and we're going to send a toast message. If everything goes well, this should arrive, and it arrived.
Okay, so that was it for my top sessions for app builders at the Microsoft Build Conference. Do let me know what sessions you enjoyed using the hashtag Appy Mondays, and I will see you next Monday, and hopefully this time at 12:30.